plants don't seek out doctors. They have an instinctual connection through which they are empowered to find their own solutions for healing.
That's Carlos Tanner. At a glance, he's a middle-aged white guy with glasses and a sensible haircut, someone you wouldn't expect to comment on the healing power of plants. If I've gleaned nothing else in the course of reporting for this podcast, it's that a lot can happen in a lifetime. Carlos exchanged middle-class comforts in Massachusetts for a dirt-floored shack in the Amazon.
When you have faith, then the doors are flung wide open.
What's made Carlos the person he is today, a lanky New Englander who communes with plants and spirits, is faith. As I've mentioned before, that concept is pretty foreign to me. And 20 years ago, it was for Carlos, too. He just wanted what most of us want.
I had done it. I had a job and was a manager, had a nice place to live, had a nice car, lived with a nice girlfriend.
He was checking all the boxes.
Society conditioned us to believe that this was success and that this would be fulfilling. It was not fulfilling. It was worse. I got more and more depressed, and I couldn't figure out why. And I accepted that it was just the nature of success. I turned to drinking more. I started doing more drugs to numb myself to the dissatisfaction I had. And at a certain point, I got to the fuck it point where I just didn't care anymore. I quit my job and started working for a drug dealer. And, you know, I was like, I don't care. Every night, go to bars and get drunk and do drugs.
This ground on. And one night, it was just like any other.
But this time, I didn't wake up in my bed. I woke up in my car underwater because I had apparently driven into a river. Thankfully, the window was down because I couldn't open the door and was able to get out of the car and swim to the shore. Looked back and just watched my car sink completely underwater at 3 a.m. in the middle of nowhere, having no clue what happened.
If circumstances had been even slightly different, if the window had been closed or if he'd smacked his head or had another round, Carlos would have gone down and never resurfaced. Instead, he was on the riverbank.
And at that point, I took back the fuck it and said, you know what? I want to live. So I said to me or to the universe or to whoever was listening that I would change my life, that I was going to make a big change, do something dramatic to fix my life, to save my life.
A few days later, the big change arrives. A friend emails out of the blue. She's in Iquitos, Peru, and she's been invited to drink ayahuasca with a shaman.
This is a sign. This is what I'm supposed to do. And this is how I will save my life.
I'm Catherine Roland, and this is Seeking. The psychedelic renaissance has made its way from Wall Street to the lab and back again, but it's also fueling a pilgrimage. This week, we're traveling to Iquitos, to the Peruvian Amazon, where thousands of Westerners like Carlos are arriving each year. They're coming to participate in ceremonies of healing and revelation, and they're looking for the real deal.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Carlos had long been captivated by the idea of taking psychedelics with a shaman in the Amazon. As a teenager, he'd read classics on the subject. He had even traveled as a tourist to Peru a few years prior, but he didn't want to drink ayahuasca on the gringo trail. He was angling for an authentic experience. I can imagine what he didn't want. There's this meme that's been making the rounds depicting a Halloween costume for a plant medicine facilitator. It's a picture of a dreadlocked white dude with leather wristbands and amulets. He's gazing at the viewer while his hands toy with some sort of magical bowl. You probably know someone who knows someone who fits this description. But there are many shades between cultural appreciation and cultural exploitation. I've never taken psychedelics with this kind of cherry picker of traditions, but I've still never shaken the sense that psychedelic ceremonies in the West are a thin derivative of the original. That almost by virtue of our Western participation, the ceremonial experience is altered and diminished, which implies that somewhere out there is that authentic and intact experience calling to us, just out of reach. And in the world of ayahuasca, the Amazon hovers like this perfect mirage. It's the source. And it's what Carlos imagined for himself when he first visited Peru.
I had a journal at that time, and I wrote, one day I'll go to the Amazon rainforest with an indigenous shaman and do it like the right way.
For all the wide-ranging conversations on the psychedelic renaissance that we've had so far in this series, to take ayahuasca in the Amazon is to reach the pinnacle of psychic experiences. It's the 12-course kaiseki dinner at the chef's table in Tokyo compared to gas station sushi. Iquitos is the capital of global ayahuasca tourism. We had to visit. As a newcomer, I braced myself for a spiritual Disneyland. But when I shared with one longtime transplant that I'd read that there were more than 600 ayahuasca retreats in the region, he'd laughed. And arriving here, I see why. It's a frontier town with dusty streets that turn to mud when the rainy season comes. There are a few elegant old buildings, relics from the rubber boom, but many have been reduced to facades with trees sprouting from the windows. There's a promenade that runs the city's edge, where artisans clock ayahuasca drinkers and sell them beads and jaguar claws. When the sun drops, there is total darkness. Iquitos is the world's largest city accessible only by boat or plane. Everyone I talk to tells me how much they hate it. The noise, the corruption. They miss homes elsewhere. They miss the jungle. But Iquitos is where the money is. It started with rubber in the late 19th century, and then there was the discovery of oil fields in the Amazon, and now there's ayahuasca. Economic boon or extractive industry, I'm not sure.
I can't imagine anything more fulfilling than the way my life is now. And I know that it wouldn't have been had I not woken up in my car underwater.
Our producer Rob and I meet Carlos for the first time in a hotel room in town. Even though he's between engagements in the jungle, he looks clean-cut and unassuming, in a t-shirt and practical pants.
It was horrible, and it really messed me up. But now, I am so grateful. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because my life did take the direction that it did.
Carlos went from deep fuck-all despair to feeling attuned with the messages of the earth itself. And it all started when he arrived in Peru 20 years ago, determined to sit with this healer, Don Juan.
I didn't really know what to expect, but we went to his house. Very, very simple construction. And it was in at the very, very end. It was the last house on this dirt road. And beyond it was the jungle. So it was like right on the edge of the jungle. So that part, I was like, this is cool.
Carlos thought this was pretty awesome. It seemed so authentic. But he still had his guard up. What if this was all a show?
But there were like 8 other people there. And that first ceremony, one of those people was a very impressive person, like a full indigenous person. And turns out that he was the chief of the Achuari tribe, which I would later learn. And so I remember thinking before I even met Don Juan, this seems pretty legit. Like these people wouldn't like get tricked. They're locals, and this guy, like, he's not going to get tricked by some fake shaman or something like that.
Carlos came in with a lot of ideas about what a real shaman might look like.
Don Juan came out of his room. He had a t-shirt on, like regular pants. He had a baseball cap backwards. And I love that. I was like, oh, good. Like, he's not wearing some big feathered headdress or something, or, you know, trying to like show off or be something he's not. So right off the bat, I was like, oh, I like this guy.
Don Juan operated out of his modest home. There were lawn chairs set up on the dirt floor, and if you needed to purge, the jungle was right out the door. Outside, Carlos took it all in. The ground, the trees, the night sky a shimmer.
So I'm looking up at the sky, and then a UFO flew over my head. And I was like, oh my God, like, while looking at that, jaw dropped, another UFO over my head. And I'm like, oh my, is this like happening? Like, what? And then a giant UFO above them, like 100 yards wide, giant disc. And that one started concerning me. And I thought, am I about to get abducted or something?
Don Juan got wind that Carlos had seen UFOs in the sky.
And he said, did you see the big one? And I was like, yeah, I did. And then he was like, I didn't know they'd be back so soon.
For Carlos, the big revelation wasn't the alien visit. It was Don Juan, who with that passing comment told him to trust in his own visions. At his next ceremony, Carlos had another visitation. A spirit came to him in the form of a man. He wasn't vaporous or hazy. As Carlos tells it, this man was as solid as you or I. He could reach out and shake his hand. And Carlos recognized this entity as his godmother's son. As a child, they'd been friendly. They'd dig for worms and go fishing.
And he had just committed suicide that year, like 6 months earlier. So I said, do you need my help? Like, is that why you're here?
Did the spirit need Carlos's help?
He thought that was so funny. He laughed so hard. Like, and he's like, do I need your help? No, you need my help.
Just weeks before, Carlos had watched his old life sink underwater. He'd had no faith, no sense of guidance. But now he would train to be a curandero, a healer.
And I had such an affinity for the ayahuasca experience. I was so fascinated by it. I'm still so fascinated by it. And Don Juan, I believe, recognized that or recognized a gift in me, because he told me in the third ceremony with him that it was my path to be a curandero.
He abandoned what remained of his life in Massachusetts. And for the next 4 years, he made his home in Iquitos, under the tutelage of Don Juan. He had finally found something genuine he could connect with.
I had no doubt that that was exactly where I was supposed to be.
That's after the break.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Don Juan came from a healing lineage and had been studying plant medicine since the age of 11. When Carlos came into his life, Don Juan was in his 50s, a father of 10. He lived with his wife and younger children at the edge of Iquitos. Rich in received wisdom, he was poor by material standards.
So I moved in to his house and I lived with him. I slept on the floor and there was no running water. We did have electricity. And so there was a very rudimentary outhouse in the back, which was really just two planks over a little stream.
There is no established path for training to be a curandero, a plant medicine healer. Don Juan had never thrown open his doors to a protege before, but he welcomed Carlos into his home and family.
So really, I lived there and I followed this guy around. Where he went, I went. What he did, I tried to do. And so when he made ayahuasca, I made ayahuasca with him. If he made a plant remedy, I made a plant remedy with him.
Living with Don Juan made Carlos realize that this great healer was also just a man.
And he certainly wasn't a guru. You know, he didn't have all the answers. I saw him in his underwear when he came out of his bedroom. I saw all the human elements of this person that clearly was a master at something that was almost non-human.
To Carlos, this meant you didn't have to claim enlightenment to walk this path. But what he was most drawn to was the non-human realm, the art of curanderismo, the way of the medicine person.
They have faith. They have an unshakable knowledge of truth in the power of ayahuasca to heal. In the existence of spirits, there is an entire belief structure that goes beyond the realm of belief into knowing, into faith. There's truth for them.
In the Shipibo medical system, curanderos have direct relationships with the spirit world.
That's the essence of the work. Like a curandero will tell you, I don't heal people. The spirits of the plants heal people. I know the spirits of the plants so well that if I ask them to do something, they'll do it. But they're the ones that heal people, and I'm the ones that bring those spirits to the healing ceremony itself.
What Carlos is talking about is a big shift from how we tend to think about psychedelics and plant medicine in the West. We've explored the power of psychedelics to treat some of our deepest psychic wounds. For most researchers and scientists, this is a process of encouraging new neural networks to heal trauma and shift perspective. But the system Carlos is starting to learn takes place on a different dimension. Before meeting Carlos, I had thought of ayahuasca as the star of the show. You drink it and you're graced with a visionary experience. But from where he stands, that's just the beginning. Because the brew is really a means of access, a way of tapping into the divine messages of the plant world. It starts with the singing of Iquitos, magic songs that are meant to summon the spirits.
So the first song that a curandero would sing is to call them, like calling them up on the phone, like, hey, I've got a ceremony coming on. Can you come here to be with me in this ceremony?
Why would the plants answer Carlos's call? In the Shipibo tradition, plants have spirits, and people can get to know these spirits through a process called dieta, or dieting.
Ultimately, you're building a relationship with a plant spirit.
Dieting is a practice that tends to last for a few days or a few weeks, or for the very advanced, it can go on for months. You ingest a small quantity of a plant, usually in the form of a tincture made from its leaves or bark. And during this period, you refrain from other foods or stimuli that might interfere with this delicate relationship. Carlos describes it to me as much like building trust with a new sweetheart. You don't want to crowd them out with competing affections. You don't want them to feel secondary to your other interests.
My first yeta was with a tree called Ayoma, and it's known in the culture to be a teacher plant.
So Carlos entered a days-long fast during which the only thing he ingested was an extract made from this tree. And then for the next 6 weeks, he committed to a very ascetic life. No sweets, no salt, no sex, boiled potatoes, silent contemplation. The idea being that he was making himself hospitable to the plant spirit.
I was calling to Ayoma to come, and then I had a vision of the tree, and from behind that came a man who came up to me and sat next to me. And Ayoma produces this big round fruit, and so he had a bowl made of the fruit.
Carlos says this tree spirit concocted a medicine made from the fabric of his own visions, mixed it up in a bowl, and then had him drink it. And then the doors of communication sprung open.
I began to have a conversation back and forth where I could ask questions that would get answered.
At this point in our exchange, my head is starting to ache from the effort of trying to wrap itself around what I'm hearing. It's so many leagues beyond my understanding. To embrace the idea that mysticism is a healing force, that's radical. But here, in a transcendent state, you're not just loping across the fertile plains of your unconscious mind. You're forming intimate relationships with plants and trees so that you can call them for specific healings. And that's just the first layer. Each of these plants also has a different personality.
Maybe you know dandelion really well, but dandelion isn't really that powerful of a plant spirit. Maybe cool guy or whatever, like to hang out, but not gonna heal your cancer for you or something.
Cure your cancer?
Well, yeah, oak tree, man. That's a powerful spirit. So if you know oak tree, chances are you will be able to accomplish more.
As wild as this sounds to me, to Carlos, it's a science. He can talk about the properties of dandelion the way you might chat about the effects of popping an Advil. With Don Juan as his friend and guide, Carlos was now learning the language of the plants, accessing messages he felt emanated from the earth itself. But entering into the spirit world isn't all love and light. Some unnerving elements started to seep in.
Most of our conversation so far, if not all of it, has been working with ayahuasca in a healing tradition towards bettering people's lives. But there is an element in the tradition that we would probably refer to as black magic. Brujeria is the name that they use here.
Around 3.5 years into his training, Carlos and Don Juan run into another curandero in the street. Don Juan had studied with this man under the same maestro some years ago, and now this guy was hard up.
And Juan's response was, come to a ceremony. And so he did come. And when he sang, I noticed there was very, very different feeling. At first, I was like, whoa, this is interesting. He sings really differently. But it also didn't feel good, didn't feel right. And Don Juan got up and left his own house, his own ceremony. He left. He didn't come back. And he didn't end the ceremony. He left.
Don Juan told Carlos that this man was doing brujeria to him, attacking him spiritually.
And, you know, this was like my teacher. So I was automatically like, what? You know, I hate that guy. What an asshole.
A massive feud erupted between the men. As Carlos tells the story, it was one shaman trying to curse the other. and Carlos felt like he was getting roped into some very shady business. In the jungle, brujería is not unheard of. It's seen as a real risk. One shaman once explained to me that plant medicine is an amplifier. It magnifies what's already inside of you. And this can be love and wonder, but it can also be darkness and violence. So you have to be careful who you do ceremonies with.
I was like, man, this is not why I'm here. You know what? I don't think I can keep doing this. This is not why I'm here. So at that point, it was very sad, but I moved out.
Carlos was set adrift. He had to find a new home, a new teacher. But what he found was a new path altogether. One where he also started to hear the song of the capitalist spirit. That's after the break. In the 4 years that Carlos had been with Don Juan, he lived a pretty hermetic life, mostly by his teacher's side. But just down the road, Iquitos was slowly starting to change. More Westerners were arriving year by year as the global interest in ayahuasca started to gain steam. So when Carlos decided to part ways with Don Juan, the magic of the Shipibo cosmology was beginning to excite people well beyond the Amazon. And it was in this new world that he had to figure out how to earn a living.
So I was not making any money. I was just living off the money I had. That wasn't going to last forever. And so I started buying telas, like these Shipibo cloths that are hand woven.
These Shipibo weavings are remarkable. They're covered with intricate geometric patterns called kene that are based on ceremonial visions. I visited one weaver at an artisan's market in Iquitos, and she showed me the different tapestries she'd made while communing with different plants. It's almost like Braille. The woven patterns are the Icaros, the shamanic song, passing through her fingers and made visual. She could trace the lines and sing what they represent. Carlos started buying these crafts and sending them back to his brother in the States, who would sell them on eBay. Carlos is totally nonchalant when he shares this with me, but I keep coming back to it. Here is someone who came to the Amazon in search of culture, but who is still engaged in this extractive process of selling sacred goods for a profit on the internet.
That's how I supported myself for a little while. And I developed an eye for the highest quality work.
Carlos found himself continually drawn to the work of one artisan in particular.
Doña Vilma Mahua, who stood up above all the rest, like her products were the highest quality. I would go to her house and then she would lay them all out on the floor of her house, which was a crazy shack down in Belen.
Belen is one of the poorer barrios in Iquitos. It's just outside the chaotic central market with its turtle eggs and dried piranha and the sour smell of dangling chickens. And this is where Doña Vilma lived with her husband, Don Enrique, a curandero who would come to shape the next chapter of Carlos's life.
And they lived in a part of Belen that flooded every rainy season. I don't think that it would be inaccurate to call it like a slum. And, you know, the poorest of the poor, his house would literally go underwater for months every year, where they would then have to build higher platforms just to they continued to live in the house. And, you know, I've went to that house several times and, you know, they had nothing. And then I was like, these people, you know, like these unbelievably powerful healers, and they have nothing. It just was wrong. You know, our culture, if you're a doctor and you live in a mansion and you drive a beautiful car and, you know, you're good. But here was the most incredible doctors and they were dirt poor. And so I definitely wanted them to have a better situation.
Even though Carlos had lived this pretty cloistered life with Don Juan, he was now very aware of new trends shaping Iquitos. All these people coming from abroad to drink ayahuasca. It was 2009, and there was a growing appetite for ceremonies and shamanic knowledge. But there were not a lot of organized opportunities. At this point, Carlos had done ceremonies with a number of different healers and had learned that each had a unique way of interfacing with the medicine. And he decided he wanted to share this with other Westerners.
I decided to create an event called the Curandero Seminar. And I thought it would be cool to have 1 week, but you spend one ceremony with one curandero, one ceremony with another curandero, one ceremony with another curandero, and they teach a workshop specific to their indigenous culture.
Carlos laid out this buffet of spiritual offerings. In the process, he started to get to know Don Enrique, and he was struck by his forthcoming nature.
I just remember being like, wow, this guy's so awesome. He's telling me, like, everything that I never could, like, get told.
This was exciting to Carlos, but what really moved him was seeing Don Enrique's healing at work. One American who had flown down to participate in the seminar had been struck by lightning, and his ear canal had collapsed. So Carlos suggested he consult with one of the healers, Doña Otilia.
And Otilia looked in his ear and then said that he should put a few drops of this oil in that ear. And he looked at me like, really? And I felt embarrassed.
Carlos urged him to consult with another curandero in the program, Don Lucho.
He was like, oh, you just need to put a couple drops of tobacco juice in there. And again, he was like, I got it. So they can't fix it, you know. But I still was like, let's see what Don Enrique says. And Enrique didn't look in his ear. He was just like, oh, yeah, yeah, got nerve damage. I know how to fix it. I can make you a remedy. He left and went to get the plants he needed to make that remedy. Instead of going to bed, like he spent all these hours making this remedy to make sure that guy had it. And then that guy took that remedy home and fucking, hey, his ear canal came back and his hearing came back and... So I was like, I want to work with you, man. Like, let's do this. Let's start a company together.
Carlos had come to Peru as a pilgrim in search of something authentic and original. Now he's starting a business. I don't have the sense that Carlos was just thinking dollar signs here. He has wrestled with the ways Western money changes local culture. I believe he genuinely wanted to help Don Enrique, to valorize this gifted teacher and bring his healing to the world. And if he was quietly concerned with whether this would detract from what first enchanted him, that was a gamble he was willing to take, because both men believed their meeting was preordained.
He told me that it was his destiny or his path in life specifically to share the Shipibo tradition of healing or the ancestral wisdom with foreigners who had lost that. I was like, you and I are on the same page.
Next week, we're leaving Iquitos and heading into the jungle to meet Don Enrique, who now sits with Carlos at the helm of one of the area's largest retreat centers. What happens to the purity and magic of plant medicine when it's opened for the world to consume? Seeking is written and reported by me, Catherine Rowland. Our producers are Hamza Umerji, Rob Dozier, and Lily Thompson. Editing by Grant Irving and Lizzie Jacobs. Our executive producers are Grant Irving and Lizzie Jacobs. Fact-checking by Natsumi Ajisaka. Music by Nolan Schneider. Mixing by Sam Baer. Thanks to our legal team, Rachel Goldberg and Allison Sherry. Special thanks to Tom Koenig and Steve Ackerman.